Hello, and welcome to yet another episode of the Back to the TARDIS podcast, the podcast where we take a look at every single episode of the 2005 revival of BBC's Doctor Who. I'm Jeff.
Hello, I'm Aurora.
It's your boy, Carcat.
And this week, we are discussing Series 7, Episode 12, Nightmare in Silver by Neil Gaiman. This is Cyberman 1. It's got a, you know, fairly dramatic redesign of the Cybermen. I'd say analogous to the fairly dramatic redesign of the Daleks, even if I think what this episode does with the Cybermen isn't spectacular, but it's still better than fucking Victory of the Daleks.
Yes. Agreed.
This episode is just so, like, there's so much about it, and none of it feels relevant. Or, like, okay, how do I phrase this? There's a lot that happens, and there are a lot of ideas in this episode, and I just care about none of them.
Yeah. You're gonna hate me.
I think where I'm at is that there's some pretty cool ideas in here, but I don't quite feel like they're executed as well as they could be, or like the overall episode isn't helping them really get pushed up to where they should be.
You're gonna hate me for this, but when I finished watching this episode and like sort of decompressed my thoughts, I felt like if Moffat or if there were Chibnall era episodes in Moffat era, this would be what they look like.
Oh man.
I know it's not Neil Gaiman's fault, because there's a whole load of behind the scenes issues and like Stephen Moffat as a showrunner juggling this and Sherlock, etc., etc. You know, laying all that aside, it's not like as bad as Chibnall era is, just like on the base of it, but just in terms of the results, that's how it felt like to me. Because there's so much that I could see, like, potential in, or small little moments where I could pull it out and be like, in a vacuum, this was good, this was a nice idea, but in totality, it was just like, I felt like I watched everything happen and nothing happen at the same fucking time.
Yeah. 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 So yeah, let's, I guess, start this off at the beginning, and most importantly, with those goddamn kids. I know Neil Gaiman can write better kids than this. Like, they are just, like, bad. They don't feel like real people.
Yeah, again, this might be like a little bit overboard, but I feel like the new kid in the recent like garbage Disney Plus Home Alone remake was better than these kids.
Jesus.
I mean that kid was in Jojo Rabbit, so like makes sense, I guess.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, it's just I don't know if these kids are worse than Jackson Lake's kid or Chloe Weber, but they're like the tier above that for me.
I don't know. I'd put Chloe Weber above these kids.
Really?
But I'm the resident Fear Her defender.
I'm trying to remember what the kids even did in the episode.
Mainly just be used as, like, kidnap bait. That's about it. They don't really do... that. You don't remember them doing much of anything because they don't do much of anything.
As far as I remember, they just get, like, captured by the weird sex brain implants and then pilot it around for a while and then...
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think this is just a symptom. I hate this trope of, like, well, this character cares about these characters a lot that we've never met. So, therefore, audience, you should care about this character. It's kind of like what they did with, like, Mel... Let's Kill Hitler, except not as bad.
And God knows those kids are never coming back.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. It's just like for all the love that I have for Series 8 Clara, and how she improves as a character, you could basically, like, the only downside to that fact is that they basically ditch everything about her character that, like, makes...
Yeah.
that, like, makes me even want to care about her. Even though they don't flesh it out, it's like, well, okay, we're never seeing you two again, you kids who we decided were important enough to not get blackmailed by and bring to a outer space planet. Like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, they're just nothing. And it's like a shame because, as I said, like, Neil Gaiman, like, is the guy who wrote, like, Coraline, you know? And to go from that to this is just oof. That's thing number one. Like, the kids aren't used very well here. But I don't think, I don't think that the episode does very good things with them, but like there was potential there maybe. Same with like the setting. That's, you know, that's where, like, if Neil Gaiman was to set an episode, yeah, this would be like where I think he'd set an episode. This fucking like run down deserted amusement park planet. Yeah.
It's just me, or is it just me, or is every Cyberman story that's not a two-parter bad? And that works both ways, because the three-part Cyberman story in series 12 gets bad by the third part, and this just goes nowhere. I'm struggling to think of a Cyberman story in New Who that, like, there's just so many ideas and so many concepts that, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but this feels way too congested. I could see you doing stuff with the kids, you know, juxtaposing the like, dead, like, amusement park planet. Like, that's some good juxtaposition, some horror imagery. The stuff we'll get into with Mr. Clever and the Doctor and, like, basically a Cyberman war. Like, that's cool, but it's just, like, here's all this content in 45 minutes. Have fun.
Yeah, I feel like a big thing is there's just so many concepts running in this. Because, like you said, you have the kids in the amusement park. You have, you know, the thing with the Emperor and everything he does. You have, like, the military presence. You have the background information of the war and all that. You have the Cybermen themselves. And then you have the Doctor with the cyber genius guy or whatever. And I feel like all of them get about 7 minutes. Like, it is kind of balanced. But 7 minutes is not enough for any of them. And I feel like they should have, like, picked three and run with those. And they didn't.
Hmm. Yeah, definitely. I also will say I do like the bit where they go and they go to the Cyberman, that's this deactivated Cyberman, and it's actually kind of a shout out to this thing that would get taken around like fairs and shit in the 1800s, I believe, called like the Silver Turk, which was like this mechanical, supposedly chess playing robot, but just like, the actual, thing. There was a dude inside it. So you weren't playing chess against the computer. You were playing chess against a real person. So like, you know, that's definitely a neat, like, little shout out. But yeah, no, like the kids pretty much don't do any, like, I'm looking at the transcript right now and the kids pretty much don't do anything except fucking complain and get captured. That's about it.
The kid Sar complains about how Clara is basically a glorified narrative plot device and said, okay, hold our beer.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a fucking shame. I forget Warwick Davis. Warwick Davis is in this. And
I'm not gonna lie, he's good in this because he's fucking Warwick Davis and he's at least decently well written. Like, yeah. He works.
No, yeah, he's a good actor. It's just like another case of like, this could have been so good, like this could have been so interesting. Or I guess not how they writ him, like that he could be interesting playing a different character, because what we get is basically like this undercover guy, and then there's like a marriage joke at the end.
The marriage joke is cringe, but I like the idea of him being the emperor.
I don't have a problem
with that.
Sure.
Not just even in exile, that he specifically was like, yeah, fuck this, I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
fair.
That's good. Like, this also might be a case of 45 minute syndrome, because I feel like it's juggling enough concepts here, and especially given that it's a design revamp for the Cyberman and like a power revamp for a Cyberman, this I feel like definitely could have benefited from being a two-parter, especially in a season where there are no two-parters. Like, fucking execute Journey to the Center of the TARDIS and like put this as a two-parter in there instead.
Yeah. And kind of what was I gonna say, what was the thing with the gold?
That is actually like, that is actually a thing from Classic.
It is. Okay,
yeah, no, like we're talking like old, like initial like 60s. That,
so I'm confused why it worked against them here though.
The thing of like it's not the code that is susceptible to dust, it's hardware.
Yeah,
like that's like just... how would the code be like, what? But you know, whatever. I will also say people make fun of it and think it's shitty, but personally I personally like the back and forth between the Doctor and Mr. Clever. I think he's a little bit hammy for what's supposed to be like a Cyberman. And I would have preferred someone that's maybe like more consistently cold, but I guess it also makes sense because it's in the body and the brain of the Doctor and hasn't like completely, I don't know.
I feel like this concept would have worked better. Like, I feel like Eleven is one of the worst people to do that with. I feel like this would have been a better concept to do with 12, maybe.
12 or 7, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 7, yeah, especially.
I mean, it follows the rule we've established that, like, pretty much whenever Matt Smith is doing anything that doesn't involve him being horny, it's probably going to be good.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. They kind of take it in a direction of, like, what if, like, a Cyberman had, like, the 11th Doctor's personality, which I guess could be like,
but that doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah,
like it's like I feel like I'm actually, for once, I'm going to praise something that Chibnall did, and y'all know what it is. It's the Lone Cyberman in Haunting of Villa Diodati, where they talk about how he's a believer, but he's not like the quote unquote like pure. He still has his semblance of self, and how that sort of affects his psyche. I feel like that doesn't work in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it going either way, because in Classic, haven't the like cyber controllers always had like a little bit more of a personality than the drones,
maybe?
So yeah, I don't know. It's, again, it's a neat idea, but like the fact that nothing is devoted enough time to, so yeah, that by the end this doesn't really stand out as anything that's done a Cyberman story differently. Like at least with the Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, I could be like, okay, this fucking like fell on its ass hard, but it was doing something like pretty, or at least it was trying to do something like pretty new.
Yeah,
this doesn't feel like that, even though it arguably should, because, you know, there's a redesign. Like it or hate it, the Ironmen, Cybermen are
I mean,
here.
I think like, and I mean, they do continue to use this Cyberman look like throughout the rest of Moffat era, pretty much. Like, they use it next year in the season finale. I think the look itself is fine. I think the power that they're shown here of like being able to just continually like iterate upon themselves at like a moment's notice to like basically like patch out weaknesses, which still I don't entirely get, because you can't patch out a hardware weakness with software. But, you know, it's an interesting idea. The only problem is that it makes it a difficult thing to write, because it literally becomes like the only thing that you can do to this is nuke it from orbit.
Yeah, it's the same problem that Star Trek eventually reached with the Borg. It's like, how do you, they adapt to fucking everything. And, you know, you could argue the Cybermen ripped off the Borg. Technically, the Cybermen are, like, older.
No,
whatever.
The Borg ripped off the Cybermen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter. Eventually, with the pop cultural zeitgeist, you know, they were going to do something like this, so whatever. But yeah, there's just... Personally, as we've gone through this, I've started to appreciate the sort of horror and, like, body horror aspect of the Cybermen more. And yeah, these designs are just sort of, like, cleaner than I like them to. And again, praising a Chibnall episode while I call this episode emblematic of everything wrong with the Chibnall era, his Cybermen redesigns like feel less pristine.
Yeah,
there's a, you know, yeah, you still no, get I that sleek that. Body design. It doesn't feel like they're like carrying around refrigerators on their chest, but it still like feel, and also the Cybermen designs in the 12th Doctor finale as well, I think both of those do it better than this. I get what they were going for. It makes sense to me that if the Cybermen are, like, literally invading worlds, you know, you would get things like this. I don't know. Maybe if they specified, like, this is, like, an elite combat unit, this is what they send to topple empires. You know, maybe if they just inserted a line like that, I'd be like, okay, that makes sense that you would, like, have different specialized Cybermen for different things.
No, I think, you know what, like, I think, like, just an idea that I have off the top of my head, which I also feel like would be an effective cost-saving measure, which is also important, because I think this episode needs that. Because I will say, the other thing that I was going to say is, it feels like, aside from, like, the silly bullet time thing and, like, the upgrades, like, they can't actually, like, really do much to show how far advanced it is, because they don't have the time or money to. But I think if they stripped it down and essentially did the Dalek format, where it is one Cyberman by itself, and then the thing becomes, okay, we need to stop it before it activates more or converts others to be more... like converts others to a cyber form, then I think that works a little bit better. And then I think it also, like, it also makes the whole plot point where they're just going, like, I understand for plot reasons why they're like, no, wait, don't detonate that nuke yet. But also, that soldier is probably right in the situation of, like, when you're dealing with something like this, you don't hesitate. There's basically nobody else on, and the few fatalities that you would have from nuking that mostly deserted planet completely pale in comparison to the amount that would be if you let that get off world.
Yeah.
And I think if there was only one that was active, that would maybe introduce more of a gray area. As opposed to where there's, like, literally, like, a fleet of them. It's like,
I'm genuinely kidding. Like, how did a fleet of Cybermen even get there? They don't even touch on that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. They don't. They're just there.
Like, were they just hiding here the whole time doing nothing, even though their entire, like, all their shit got blown up?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I do think the backstory, the like historical backstory for the episode is really good.
Yeah,
like
no,
that was one part where
history.
I was like, that's fucking good. Especially the you know, they look up at the sky and there's just this entire blank zone. And he's like, yeah. I feel bad for the person who had to press that button, and it's like, haha, wink wink.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
There's also
exactly.
some good, there's also some good, like, I don't know, as a Car Cat, right?
Yeah.
Making that up? Okay. Names. It's a problem for me. As you said, there's so many ideas that it, like, feels like there's not enough time. Like, just the socio-political, like, exploration of this alone is very interesting to go into. And we haven't even touched up on, like, the military politics of, like, this, I believe this, like, unit that's here is, like, sort of facing a punishment for, like, being on this planet, right? I don't know, I sort of, like, zoned out.
Yeah, they're a punishment corps.
Through, like, some parts of the episode, because it was, like, really not holding me, especially anything where, like, the kids were in it. But, like, yeah, so, like, just stuff like that, and, like, how this unit would be the least equipped to deal with the Cybermen stuff. Like, there's so much good here, but then we have to cut to the kids, but then we have to cut to Porridge, but then we have to cut to Mr. Clever, and how he's, like, his idea of getting Clara to help him is being real horny, which I guess could be a meta commentary on how annoying horny Matt Smith is, but probably not. Yeah, it's just, as I said, it's incredible how everything and nothing happens.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And you know, I think I like the, and I like the idea of, like, this chess game. I feel like that's a very classic, like, idea that they do. And I mentioned this in the server, but I especially like that basically the Doctor wins by being so contrarian that he manages to distract, like, the entire Cyberman hive mind and is able to outwit them.
Yeah, I'm a little unconvinced about how he does that. Like, if he could do the thing with the glove from the start, why didn't he?
No, I think I think specifically what it is, right, is that if he'd done it, been able to do it before, if, like, he couldn't have done it before because the cyber planner in his head would have immediately caught on to it. But he basically overloaded the processing, which slowed everything down to the point where their reaction time and general cognitive functions would not be fast enough for him to catch it. Then again, the fact that he says it out loud doesn't help, but, you know, dramatic tension. It's a TV show. All right.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'll give the episode this one then. I can see that.
Yeah. Cause, like, the entire point is like the Cybermen just kind of slow down and stop because, like, their processing bandwidth has been completely ganked.
Of course.
Yeah.
Eleven could have just regenerated to get the cyber controller Mr. Clever out of there, because as we know, the Doctor has infinite regenerational ability.
Yeah, it's the other thing of, like, wow, this plot point, at least in the context of this season itself, of him going, like, him basically bluffing and going, like, I could regenerate and knock you out. And in the context of that season, you learn that actually, no, he couldn't. And Moffat probably knew that. But then, you know, once again, Chris Chibnall comes in to fuck everything up.
I think I've said before, my personal headcanon is that even if you take the Doctor being the Timeless Child as cool, which I don't, but even if you do, I personally would say that the Time Lords unlocked their ability to do it infinitely again. Even though I think that's still stupid. That's how I go around it in my head.
Even if it's still solving a problem that did not need solving.
Yep. God.
Yeah, no. So yeah, they destroy all the cyber planner, and then while everyone's still down, the network's still basically crashed, they're like, okay, we're gonna get off this planet and blow this shit up. And Porge reveals that he's the Emperor, and there's a bit of the cringe proposal.
Now, what the fuck was that?
Like, yeah.
What's the point of that in the episode meant to be?
I don't even know. Like, it's so funny because even in the episode, Clara's like, the fuck no, and he's like, yeah, okay.
You see, that wasn't in the script. They were just filming, and Warwick Davis just really
don't
liked...
Don't do that to Warwick Davis.
No, man, I love him. He's one of the best things of both the recent Star Wars movies, and I think he's literally in every Harry Potter movie.
Pretty much, yeah.
Except Deathly Hallows Part 1. I hate how I can remember that so easily, but...
I mean, that's not actually that hard, because there is no Hogwarts shots in that movie. Where would he be?
Yeah. There's one Hogwarts shot as the train approaches. Anyway, I'm gonna stop. my HP poisoned brain. That end part is cringe. I don't know. Personally, this whole episode, like, in my mind... Because after this, we have the name of the doctor, right? Like, it goes from this story that basically is, like, inconsequential to the fucking finale. And, you know, we still have the Clara question. We still have, you know, we haven't seen the Great Intelligence since the second fucking episode of 7B. And that's popping up again.
Soon, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think in my rewrite, I would have Mr. Clever be more related to the Great Intelligence, and also sort of, I would change the backstory in some way to make this a part of the Time War, because that just makes sense to me, and it could be a hint that, like, okay, things are changing about this that shouldn't, and then you go into the 50th and be like, oh, okay, we're literally changing how this ends, you know, something like that. I don't know. This episode bored me. I'm doing rewrites. Sue me.
Yeah. Like, that's the other thing is, like, it's not even Victory of the Daleks, like, train wreck bad. It's just fucking, like, yeah, this kind of sucks and is boring. Like, yeah, like, it doesn't even, it's not even the kind of bad that makes an impression.
It's just, like, says so much and yet has so little.
Yeah. This should have been a two-parter. I legitimately think if this was a two-parter and maybe, like, you had more time, like, you were able to give about 30 minutes each to, like, more time, or maybe not 30 minutes,
like 15 minutes each
to the initial, like, startup and to, like, the climax, it would just, I don't know if it would be, like, amazing, but I think it would help ease a lot of the problems that it has.
Yeah, I definitely think a big problem is just how soon they get into everything, and it just makes the kids and Clara totally pointless in the episode, pretty much.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
like, they get there, and within a few minutes, there's already a Cyberman. And it's just, like, I feel like there should be room for a bigger lead in there. Like, I think we've noted before that some of the best episodes are the ones that really slow down and don't introduce the monster of the week until pretty late into the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, if... I could just imagine part one being, like, very character focused. You slow down in this, like, very eerie atmosphere with Clara and the kids and maybe this military company unit. Have the Doctor and Mr. Clever, like, meet, but you don't know it's a cyber controller or whatever the fuck it is, like, head of the Cyberium. And then at the end, like, and then have the second whole episode, you could have be like the money shot, like, Cybermen war thing. I don't know. There's just so many better ways you could do this than, like, hey, let's do all of this at once. That'll be cool.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Again, probably not, like, any, like, real fault of Gaiman. It just seems like there was, like, this time and budget consideration and, like, that fucked over, like, what should have been draft two of, like, six or seven became the final draft is how this feels to me.
Like, especially because, like, I don't remember where I saw this, but I distinctly remember reading somewhere that Neil Gaiman was not particularly happy with this episode. Like, I'm not sure.
I mean, that would make sense with the caliber of work I feel like he tries to put out. I could easily see that.
Hold on, I'm checking my usual places to see if I can find anything. Yeah. According to TV Tropes, so, you know, it's a grain of salt. Both Neil Gaiman and Matt Smith have expressed their disappointment and frustration with the story. Smith found the double acting role to be a hard job and received little support from the crew. Gaiman enjoys the script as he wrote it, but found that the finished product was misinterpreted by the director, leaving a lot of his intentions unclear. Gaiman revealed in 2018 that he felt like the product was being taken out of his control and being weakened without his consent, leaving him with a bitter experience. So, yeah, it got borked in translation. Oh, well.
Insert your favorite. The
director did a fucky wucky.
Insert we got lost in translation from Taylor Swift's All Too Well 10-minute version here.
Okay. No, I'm not going to do that.
Yes.
Anyways, moving on to ratings, I think. There's a lot of good ideas in here. Shame about what happened to the episode. I rate this, zero interesting kids out of two.
Fuck.
Also, I guess, like, a C.
Yeah.
CD's nuts.
Professionals at work. fuck. Yeah, this episode is here. It happened, and then it stopped happening. Just goes to show that, like, just rushing to all the good bits and then not properly pacing it, or giving the actors proper support, or the writer's proper support, probably won't work out well for you. Future notice. This episode is clearly a Chibnall out of Moffat, and, that hard D plus, light C minus.
CD's nuts.
It is a very, very right under okay episode, or a bit under okay episode. It could be better. And yeah, like a 5.75 out of 10.
Gold, at least you tried, star. All right. So next week, we will be discussing I think it's Name of the Doctor next, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. I think what we're probably going to do is we're going to have our last episode for the year be the Day of the Doctor episode and not the Night of the Doctor episode, just so everybody can have, like, a proper Christmas break. So yeah. We'll do that, and then we'll have a break in some point early mid-January. We'll pick back up with Time of the Doctor and Deep Breath. Until then, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at B2TARDISPod. You can support us on Patreon for a number of benefits, such as early access to episodes, the ability to listen in live to episodes being recorded, and potentially even the ability to guest star upon an episode of your choosing. I'm Jeff. You can follow me on Twitter at WheatleyDL.
I'm Warwick Davis's new wife. You can follow me at Of Mice and Femmes.
Congratulations. On
Twitter.com. Thanks.
I'm the target audience of Dr. X Cleverman self-cessed AO3 fix, and you cannot find me.
And we will see you all next week.